Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Four Cats Boutique on Etsy. You guys know we love a ton of different fandoms. Song of Ice and Fire, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Wheel of Time, DC, Marvel, and of course, House of the Dragon. Okay, well, if you're looking for a birthday present, a Christmas gift, you guys got to check out Four Cats Boutique on Etsy. Katie and Jordan are such a big selection of stickers, earrings, keychains, art prints, bookmarks for the reds and the greens. You can choose your allegiance. Go big, get a full-on banner if you would like, whatever you're into. You'll find the perfect gift for nerds like us on 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. That's the number 4, cats with a K. And you can even use a code BTK10 to get 10% off for checking them out through 4Cats Boutique and BTK10. Guys, there's today's sponsor, which lets us do bigger and better things for the channel. And dear God, hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Butt Knight.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. And I think we finally understand the beast beneath the boards.
You know, episode nine is always the big episode. Was not expecting that. This episode went most of the way I would thought. It was mostly greens, but man, the memes, the pictures, I cannot just wait to see Twitter exploded. And I thought it was all going to be about God, we hate Aegon, screw this guy. And we'll dive into that because there's so many cool details about his crowning. Mm-hmm. But the queen who never was, she could end the whole thing.
She could have ended the whole thing, and I just kind of love, and I said this last time, that Rhaenys is so unreadable in her emotions and how cold she seems to be by all the time she's been spurned by this, you know, absolute BS treatment she's received over the years. And then for this, and her, I mean, I almost felt like your car was coming. Matt, I literally had a moment where I was like, are they just going to like go off the rails here? Like, are they really just going to go off the rails?
For a second, I thought she was going to die.
Just a second there. I actually did too.
I was like, that would be an enormous change. And by the way, guys, we will try to keep, please keep this in the chat. Yes. Spoiler free. We will keep this spoiler free for the books. Go ahead and drop the old rate this out of 5 stars so we can get the chat going and see what you guys think. But man, this was an absolutely amazing episode. First and foremost, I know I've said it before, but today might have been the best scored Game of Thrones,
yes,
House of the Dragon episode ever.
The
music was just, it just so stood out. I mean, like 10 out of 10, 5 stars out of 5 stars doesn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah, the intro, or I'm sorry, like the first scene of this episode, that entire time the music was playing, I just kept, my mouth just kept dropping open. I'm like, this music is fantastic. And the music at the end, when during the coronation, and then when the dragon comes up and the music's picking up, like, dude, my heart is still pounding.
It was so good. And then his coronation too. I mean, it was just such a cool scene. And I was wondering where they were going to have it take place, because they didn't necessarily say. And then it's, oh, it's the dragon pit. And then you see Rhaenys walking in. Okay. And you're just like, like, this is, who knows what's going to happen. So let's go back. Let's go back to the beginning of the episode and work our way through, because my God, the end is just so huge. We did not get Rhaenyra or Daemon. And I believe I saw like IMDb or something. I saw on Twitter that like this episode was going to be all about the greens, and the next episode, this is the first time I actually have not watched the preview, because I'm just like, now I just want to see it as it is.
Yeah.
But everything I've seen on Twitter was that this episode is going to be all about the greens, and the next episode is going to be all about the blacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my wife had towards the end, she's like, oh, there's no Rhaenyra Daemon, is there? And I said, ah, yeah, you didn't notice. And she's just like, oh, that some people are going to hate that. And I was like, well, they just have to get over it. It is what it is, right? It's a decision that they made. I thought the episode was really strong. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about how the pace was moving on and on a little too quickly. I mean, this is what happens when you kind of slow down. You get to take time. We don't have to rush through a lot of these things now. But, you know, we opened up, and I don't know if you caught this, but Talia, which is White Worm's Missaria's little, you know, rat in the Red Keep, she lights some candles in the window when the king dies. And I believe that is how Missaria knows that the king is dead, when she meets
one by tower. One by land, two by sea. Okay. You know, that's how they're doing it. You know, so many things in this episode, you know, the opening again, just that it's so somber. Viserys is dead. And we've been talking really this whole season about Alicent, and how they're really portraying her different than in the books. And I'm beginning to not necessarily like Alicent more, but I'm really beginning to like the portrayal of her. And and in the books, she just comes across, and we talked about this last week, as she just seems evil. In the book, she just comes across as complete, like this evil character who may have even killed Viserys, but that's just sort of how she's portrayed. Here, I actually like it more that she has this sense of honor and duty, because now she genuinely feels like she is doing the right thing. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And it makes these events feel more powerful for her, because she feels like this isn't what she just wants to do. It feels like what she feels she has to do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, her being so pious and leaning into religion, I think and then, you know, Viserys's last words, her knowing that there is some sort of prophecy, but not knowing all the details. It's like one of these things where you can really get down a rabbit hole where you think you're being justified, like you are ordained by God to do these things. And I don't necessarily know if it's going that deep with her, but they've definitely laid the groundwork for her type of reaction that she has. But it's really interesting to see her and Otto at a kind of a standoff, because you're right. Alicent in the show is very righteous, very pious. In the book, it is very much she's on the same page as Otto. Like, we don't get all the details, but like basically when Viserys dies, it's like it's game on. Like it's time to crown Aegon.
Right? Yeah. In the book, she comes across as power hungry. And I think one of the, you know, going into House of the Dragon, one of the things I thought that would be good for the show, and one of the things that I knew would differentiate it from Game of Thrones, is that in Game of Thrones, you have like the War of Five Kings, right? So you have sort of five factions, really six if you count the White Walkers, and then it just gets bigger and bigger, and there's just so many players. Going into this, you know, we knew, yeah, you have some guys who are on the fringe and some teams that are on the fringe that'll switch sides and will move around, but really it's just going to be two teams. And so I was kind of nervous going into this, because I was like, well, it might just be too simple and that everyone's just pro Rhaenyra. But I am really just loving the way they're portraying Alicent, because even though I'm not team Alicent and team greens, obviously, I think you will have people begin to, you know, empathize and sympathize for her character. And it does sort of cause you to kind of root for her a little bit. And you need that. You need reasons to root for each side, which is one of the things I think that made Game of Thrones so amazing was, you know, we meet the Lannisters right out of the gate and you're like, evil. They're the bad guys. It's obvious. But then you meet Tyrion and you're like, well, okay, maybe they're not all so bad. Right. I kind of like him. And so now with Alicent and even Aemon a little bit, you kind of root for, because he's, you know, he's like, I should be king, actually. Aegon doesn't want it. And so it's a good thing the way they're doing this, where you still kind of root for these people a little bit.
Yeah, it's not so much, I mean, obviously it's blacks versus the greens, but that's kind of the pitch. But the actual selling point once you're into the show is the fact that these characters, even if they're within a faction, actually have a lot of their own agency. And I think that's one of the biggest differences in the book to this is in the book, I never felt Allison have much of a differing opinion from Otto or any of these things because it's so, you know, broad. But with this, I feel like Allison has a lot more agency, like her sending out Aemon and Crispy, as we call him, to go get Aegon was cool. I like that. It's like, who's going to get to him first, results in a little sword battle or whatever. But it shows that Allison actually has like scruples that she's trying to stick to, even though she's obviously bending for old Larys, who apparently loves stinky stompers. Like he's into
some
fan.
There were some feet. And look, I will say this. It is not just a thing. I know it's like becoming a thing, right?
Oh, it's what a was thing.
It's like you're seeing it more and more in Hollywood now, right? It's like there was a Ben Affleck movie. It was like, I don't know. It was like a Netflix thing or something where he's with this girl. It was a few months ago and it was all over Twitter and everyone's like, they just keep showing her feet. And it's like, it's a thing. So we got to see out. She has a tattoo too. And I was like, well, did they mean to keep that in? Like,
yeah, that's the one thing
Hightower have it, or was it just, you know, Olivia Cooke has a tattoo? What I think we're gonna see is, I almost think they're never gonna say anything, but I think we're gonna see Rhaenyra's feet, and she's gonna have the same tattoo, and then it'll be like, oh, look, it's like their thing, man.
So you think it's like a bestie tattoo from back in the day?
I do. I think it's like a BF. I think it's gonna be a BFF tattoo. What if they put their legs, like they stand side by side?
This is going into fan.
It's like and it's like a symbol, right? And it's like a symbol.
And then Larys is just between them, just rocking and rolling.
Oh my god, I don't want to see his feet, man. Oh my god, man. Warner Brothers is hurting for money, okay? I mean, I get the Song of Ice and Fire Feet Finder app going, and I'm pretty sure you could start to make some bank, you know?
Oh, man, I was laughing aloud. I mean, it was just so... Dude, the dude playing Larys is so creepy. Like, so creepy.
Jimmy can't even continue.
I can't even... The stinky stompers, man. They got me.
Well, I got to point out this comment here from Demon's Gate. Dem toes kind of thick. I'll make a TikTok. Demon's Gate, you're going on TikTok. Okay. That's the best comment I've seen.
Kind of getting back to this though, real quick. Allison also has a little bit of another romantic interest that isn't so shameful. She kind of gives Crispy Cole the nod for your feelings or love that you have for your queen and your duty or whatever she said. So have Allison and Crispy been getting it on behind Viserys' back? You think?
I think so.
Or do you think she's manipulating him?
No, I think, you're right. I think she's just manipulating him.
I'm very curious. Very, very curious. Crispy Cole, by the way, is unbearable. I just want him to die.
The actor's so good.
He's great. He's great.
Yeah. I just saw he's going to be, you know how they keep doing these like Disney live action remakes of things. He is going to play whatever the prince, I haven't seen it. You know, what do they have all this? He's going to play the prince in like the Tangled. They're going to do a live action Tangled. I'm like, oh, he's like, that seems like perfect for him.
Yeah. I mean, My wife says that he looks like he's straight out of Jersey Shore, that if he was like two cast members kid, that she would believe it. Which I thought was kind of funny. I think she might be manipulating old Crispy Cole, but whenever Westerling takes off his cape or in that whole the whole altercation before Crispy, I was like, I know it's not going to happen, but I wanted Westerling to gut him right then and there.
I actually thought Kristen Cole was going to kill him because books, he's dead like 20 years ago.
Yeah, at this point, like obviously they made Crispy the Lord Commander now, but yeah, in the books he had already been Lord Commander.
But you have Grant McTavish. I mean, my God, he's like, what a you chat. Know, this. Oh, he's such an amazing actor. You can't get rid of him. He's in The Witcher. He's great.
Yeah, he's in a lot of things.
He's great in everything he's in.
What did you think about Beesbury getting the old head smash? Just killed at the table. What did you think of that?
you know, I mean, we kind of knew that he wasn't long for this world from the books, but yeah, you know, that whole scene was done really well because, again, Alicent comes and she feels like she's telling everyone, you know, like she thinks we're ready to crown Rhaenyra, but she's like, oh my God, like Viserys just told me this thing. And they're like, we've been planning this for. So they would have moved forward with it. It was obvious they were going to move forward with it, whether she had heard Viserys say that or not.
Yeah.
But what did you think of her being very adamant about, we have to, you know, you like spare Rhaenyra. It's Viserys's, Viserys's daughter. What do you think? Like, how would that conversation have went if she hadn't heard that dream?
Well, so that's a good question. I will say this. I'm glad that they had her bring it up and have her play the opposite side, because if you would have went from last episode, her kind of making peace with Rhaenyra and, you know, showing some genuine emotion for her husband, to immediately willing to backstab and put her on the throne just because Viserys said this thing about Aegon, I would have felt like it was kind of like shoehorned a bit. But they stayed with the consistency of last episode of like her wanting some sort of peace and also to honor Viserys. And it kind of shows that she is like truly thinking in her head. She believes she's honoring Viserys's wishes, right. Which she says, you know, I'm sure he doesn't want his daughter killed and his brother killed. So the fact that they changed it to make her, you know, a little bit more 3D in a way, I actually like it. I like the fact that they stuck with it. I think it could have worked just as well for it if they would have made Alicent just power hungry. But I think like what you said, maybe it would have been too two-dimensional, right? We get a little bit more of complexity within the factions now, which is also going to happen in the Blacks, I think. I think on Rhaenyra's side, we're going to see some turmoil as well. And we'll have to see how that plays out probably in season two. But yeah, I like that. I was kind of shocked when they all admit that they had been planning treason this entire time. In Beesbury's death in the books, it said he might have been thrown out the window, said he might have had his throat slit. There was many things, whether Kristen Cole did it or whatever. For me, I think it's probably the right call to make it look like an accidental death with Kristen, you know, dribbling his head like a basketball off the table. But in a way, I kind of wish it would have been a little bit more brutal. Like if it had just been a throat slice, right? And then you really have Alicent like, whoa, 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 what in the fuck? You know, instead she's kind of like, oh my God, what has happened? This is a horrible accident. Look what's already unfolding in front of us. So like, I get the fact that making an accident makes it a little bit more digestible for Alicent being there. But at the same time, I kind of wish it would have been a little bit more like, for, you know, no pun intended, cutthroat maybe.
Right. Right. Well, they did obviously put a few other people. Well, they hung one guy, and then right. So I mean, very obvious that they're moving quick, and I thought was great. And they had to actually go find Aegon. And yes, you know, he didn't want it, which I thought was great, because that's also, that is going to play in a lot more with Aemon and Helaena going forward. Because there's a lot of theories in the books actually that and we kind of almost got a little hint towards it here. There's in the books, you know, or it actually, it's not even really, I actually don't even know if it's a mention. It's not even one of the things that like Mushrooms mentions. It's just sort of a fan speculation, is that Aemon and Helaena and is actually the father of Aegon and Helena's kids. There's a lot of theories about that. And then we see him in her room when Alicent walks in. So that kind of plays into that a little bit more. And here he's saying, you know, to Kristen Cole, I should be king, right? We've both been sort of disinherited by our birth. And then Aegon is saying to Aemon, I'll leave. You can, like, I don't want it. Like,
like, bro, I don't even want this shit. Like, just take it. And then the shot on Aemon's face as he walks away, you know, I thought that was really good. Also, Helaena, whenever she kneels, like kind of bends her head to Aegon in his coronation, she's actually facing Aemon, and Aemon is just staring a hole through Aegon. And I'm like, man, this is cool. Like, this is really subtle.
Yeah, it was actually, all of his coronation was very powerful, because they did something really, really cool. He's walking in and the shot is entirely on his face,
as he's walking into the swords coming in, and he's beginning to realize all these people are sort of rooting for me. And I get to be king. Very different than, say, like Joffrey.
Yep.
Because Joffrey just wants to be king because he's like, oh, I'm a king and I can do whatever I want. He doesn't want it. And I think he's going to sort of get into it and then, become sort of the character that he will become. But as they were placing the crown on his head, it was all out of focus shots. And he's like in the lower third, and it's showing everyone else's face as the crown is being put on his head. It was a very, very cool scene.
Yeah. And one of the things I liked most about it was actually the facial acting from the actor for Aegon, because we have kind of been led to this point, especially when having the carriage ride with Allison and all those times before, we can tell that Aegon struggles. It seems obviously he's kind of evil, but he also does struggle with the fact that he was kind of shunned by his father, and he said he didn't like me. Like, I don't feel like Aegon particularly feels like he has anyone that cares about him. And his mother, even though obviously he deserved to be scorned, that probably plays on him too. Whenever she said, "You're no son of mine," he asked, do you love me, mom? And she doesn't really give him that answer that he probably was looking for. So whenever he was on stage being coronated and the people start cheering for him, his facial acting, you could tell he was becoming almost intoxicated by the acceptance of the audience. And this is the moment where I think Aegon says, oh, that's what it means to be king, to be liked, to be accepted by the people. And obviously maybe at first it all goes well, and then your approval ratings go down into the, you know, the shitter after. But
right.
I feel like it was really evident that he was realizing the praise that comes with being king. And I also wonder if he has any worries about all those little bastard boys that he's been dropping off down in Flea Bottom, because they showed the cut to the kid in the daycare fight club they had going on down there in Flea Bottom. And Eric, one of the Erics, says, "Aegon," he said, "he's got them all over the place." And it's like, oh, shit.
Right.
Not good, Aegon.
What did you think of Kristen Cole attacking one of the Erics?
Yeah, wild, right?
Because that doesn't happen. Like, we don't really know what happens there. There for a second, I almost thought they were gonna kill him, and I was like, hold on a second here.
I thought they were too.
Hold on a second here.
Like, and I was wondering maybe if like the one brother is gonna stab the other one in the back or something. Like, I was kind of weird because the brothers get, and this isn't really a spoiler for the future, but the brothers get split. One goes to Dragonstone, one stays in King's Landing.
Right.
And I was kind of expecting that split to happen at some point here. I assume it probably will next episode.
It kind of happened a little bit.
Yeah.
Here, because you see the one up on the stair steps looking down, and then the other Eric leads Rhaenys out, and then she ultimately gets to her dragon, which I guess we can talk about. Unless there's anything else before that moment we want to hit on.
Anything
in the middle of the episode, because there was a lot of great dialogue between like Allison and Otto. Allison sort of tells Otto off, basically, and hey, like, I'm in charge now. You're going to have to step back. I'm doing it my way. We got to see Aegon the Conqueror's crown.
Yes, I was going to bring that up because me and you on a Patreon episode last week were kind of talking about the crowns, and we were talking about the difference between the crowns, who's worn those crowns. So that's a really cool Patreon episode that we did. But yeah, Aegon's crown, and now Viserys's crown's getting kind of sent over to the side here, and it'll be very curious to see where that ends up. Right.
Right.
But not only Aegon's crown, dude, but Blackfyre in the hand of Aegon, yes, when he lifts it up. Like, even though I am not a supporter of this usurper, I got to tell you, I got chills during his coronation.
It was cool. No, it was just an excellent cinematography for that. And to have it take place in the dragon pit was at least, you know, smart on their part, because one, it's this huge open area. But also just because it's like, no, this is like Targaryen. He's wearing Aegon the Conqueror's crown. Like, we're making this as obvious as possible. The people at first were kind of like, what's going on?
Yeah, because no one knows the king's dead, right? They're hearing bells. Right. People are being ushered. It's craziness. And not to mention that morning, it looked like maybe Missaria's brothel was being burnt down after Larys said, hey, let me do the old tug and tug, and then I'll go burn down the White Worm's. You know, I'll take out the head of this spider network, I think is what he called it. So that's going to be interesting. Like, Missaria now has a direct action against her. And I thought it was interesting that she told Otto that the people will decide. You know, ultimately, it's the people who give you the power. Yeah. So it'll be cool to see Fleabottom represented in that manner. Yeah, dude, the people are a little confused in the book. For this scene, it's actually disputed. Eustace says that there were 100,000 people in the dragon pit. I think that's the number. And then Mushroom says that it was like half full. People were like picking their nose. No one really cared. Some people yelled, "Long live the queen!" You know, right. Mushroom made it sound like it was like, "Yeah, it wasn't that big of an event." Like, So we saw, you know, there were tons of people packed in there. And I think ultimately, I think they're just excited to have something to do. Like, I don't necessarily think that small people care as much right now. They will.
Yeah.
So and I think they did at the end.
Right. Yeah. So certainly a massive difference, right, with Rhaenys getting her dragon bursting up. I was expecting her to flee, but I guess it didn't, like, you're watching it and you're like, oh my god, maybe she's getting her dragon and do something, but then you kind of forget about it because you see her sneak away. So they act like, and then so much other stuff is going on, you actually kind of forget about her for a second, and then just a boom explosion and you're like, whoa, like, it was awesome. I did think she was going to start torching people, but she didn't. Right.
Yeah. I'll be honest. What I thought was
maybe
happen,
because there was no bells ringing.
I thought personally,
so, you know, there was no bells ringing. So the dragon didn't freak out and torch.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like whenever you scare a horse, you know,
right.
Kind of same thing. Right. That's what happens. Season eight. You know what I thought? I thought they were going to walk out of Dragon Pit, and I thought it was going to be like, you know, Aegon smiling and his mother smiling, and then they look off in the distance and they just see the Red Queen flying away and be like,
That's kind of what I thought would happen too. I didn't think she was going to absolutely just like blow open like the floodgates, but
the beast beneath the boards.
I'm 100% there for it. It was awesome. It was a great visual spectacle. The dragon just walking in, and you're just like, you can just hear it screeching. Like, so absolutely phenomenal.
The scale of it worked so well. And dude, Rhaenys Targaryen, stand up. Like, let's go. Easily the most disrespected Targaryen of all time. One of my favorite, easily my favorite female Targaryen that there is. And I put some respect on her name. That's all I'm saying.
I will say, when Alicent is talking to her after she was sort of put in the after they locked her in, she her plea to her, did that even make sense? It's like, you were once supposed to be a queen, but you were scorned because you're a woman. Like, basically, so why would she side with you now? It's like so obvious that she would side with the next woman who's about to get the chance she didn't have.
I think Alicent is so diluted that she believes that Rhaenys also believes that this is going to cause a civil war if they sit Rhaenyra on the throne. And she's saying, well, don't, you know, hey, it's not so bad just to move from the shadows, right? It's not so bad to control the men on the throne. And then when Rhaenys counters back and she said, like, you just want a window in your cage, essentially, I was like, god damn. But yeah, this shows how diluted Alicent is. And honestly, it's really, really good to have this scene because it just shows you that Alicent's way of doing this. Like, she crowned Aegon. Like, she crowned Aegon. And she's like, but I don't want to kill Rhaenyra. Like, what do you think is going to happen, dum-dum? And like, this is the fantasy land that she's kind of like living in, right? Like, I just don't understand how Alicent can sit here and think that this is going to go well.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked by that. That scene. I was just like, okay, well, it's good because at least she's trying to plea.
Yes.
To plea for it. But yeah, I was like,
I think it's meant to show that Allison's like reality she's living in is like way too optimistic. Like, there's just no way that's going to happen. And then Rhaenys just not taking shit from her and pulling away from her was awesome. I loved it. Also, yeah, Eric,
nothing. Absolutely. I was just like double checking here. Literally nothing in Fire and Blood about her even being there.
Yeah, this is a show added scene that I personally.
Well, even her being sort of locked in the chamber and having to escape is not even in there. And I was like, let me just double check. But yeah, like nothing at all about it.
Yeah. And Also, let's also just take a minute to kind of talk about what we talked about last week. We said that this was,
you know, Jimmy, every holiday season, I find myself with a dilemma. And my wife's extended family Christmas, we do a white elephant gift, and I never know what to get.
Well, Matt, spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. All in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling.
Yeah, they scour the globe for original handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their website. Things like chocolate from around the world, handcrafted cribbage boards, wine glasses, bourbon sets, just about anything you want to find that would be a unique or uncommon gift they have in their selection.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts that you can personalize.
And from holiday host to hostess gift to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone from book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can find just anywhere.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee. That's uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Going to be the climax episode and maybe some Fallout in 10. That is not the case. So that means next week, that's the climax. Like that, I think that's what where we're going to see the true culmination of season one come together. So that's a bit of a break from Game of Thrones, right? The episode 9 season.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, technically, Viserys' funeral was this episode. Aegon was crowned king. I believe Joffrey was technically crowned king in episode 9, right? Because he's there to say that Ned Stark is. Well, I mean, technically, I guess, you know, it's like episode 8 because he gets imprisoned or, you know, whatever. But I mean, it was still an episode 9 worthy penultimate episode of, you have a big, huge, mega event, and then episode 10 is going to be thing. So, I mean, how do we think episode, this is the first week I have not watched the preview at all. I have zero plans to watch it. Nice. So if you've seen it, let's not spoil it, but what are we thinking for next week?
I mean, all I want to see is Rhaenyra's reaction. One difference from the book that we know as of now, and just, I guess I should confirm this, but I think we all know, like, Rhaenyra was not like 8-9 months pregnant last episode. In the books, when she hears the news, she's pregnant. So that is a change.
She might have been.
She wasn't pregnant last episode, was she? Oh no, wait, maybe she was. I can't remember. Yeah.
They sort of showed her, and I here with her hand on her stomach, and I thought she could have been. Yeah.
Okay, she was. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I got that wrong. Believe it
but
or not,
she wasn't very far along.
She wasn't close to due. Okay, I'm excited to see how Rhaenyra reacts to the news. How about that? We'll go with that because I just read this piece of Fire and Blood today, and I'm like, oh boy.
Does it just end with her sitting? With her sitting on the Dragonstone. Like, that's the final shot.
Maybe the final shot's her taking off on the... I don't know, dude. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see, but I just want to see the reaction. Like, the visceral acting from Matt Smith.
Oh, and Emma Darcy is going to be
Emma Darcy is going to be tremendous. Yeah.
And it's just going to be so good.
Do you think next episode that we see Rhaenys at Dragonstone?
Oh, I would say so. I mean, okay. Where else? I guess she could fly back to Driftmark.
Maybe she wants to go find Corlys.
Could be.
Right? Because we don't know. Corlys had a fever. We don't know if he's alive or dead. Like, it is up in the air. They're not sure. They stopped hearing from him. Be very curious to see if maybe we see a Rhaenys going on an adventure to find Corlys, or maybe, you know, she arrives at Dragonstone with news of Corlys. Like, you know, we got a lot to figure out on Team Black, don't we?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, the only thing I think a cool shot would be like Rhaenyra and Aegon. I don't know if it should be Aegon, but you need, like, maybe you have like a side by side shot or something, or you doing a back and forth between Alyssa and Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
Doing something, like whether they're both sitting on the throne or however you're going to do it.
But I think the last 15 minutes. I feel
like
that
it's got to be like a. But I thought I read that Allison's not even in next episode.
Really?
Kind of like how I think I thought the next episode, at least I haven't watched the preview, but from like on Twitter and Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire news, is that the next episode is this episode to be all greens, next episode to be like all blacks.
Yeah, so I mean, if they leave Allison out, that is an interesting decision, I think, to not have every actor in the finale. That's a decision. I'll have to see how it plays out. I could see people not enjoying that as much. But with that said, I really feel like Matt Smith and Emma Darcy are the stars of the show. I mean, obviously, so is Olivia Cooke and all these other people, right, that are on the green side. But really, especially for the fan favorites, I would say that the Rhaenyra side is the one that people really want to see. So. Ryan Turbush has a really good comment. He said, Allison is holding to her past friendship with Rhaenyra. Does she really believe that their history can overcome the actions of usurping the throne? I'm not sure how I feel about that in this episode. I think so, Ryan, what I think she's holding on to is actually not the friendship. I think what she's holding, I mean, that's definitely a part of it, but the bigger thing is that she is trusting that Rhaenyra will believe her whenever she swears that her father said Aegon should sit the throne. I think she is literally putting full-fledged faith, which for the basis of how she has become extraordinarily pious, I think that makes sense. But she's putting all of her faith in the fact that Rhaenyra will honor her dad's last wish. Now, I think we know that Rhaenyra has no intention of believing this and would be a fool too. And also Rhaenyra is probably going to, you know, maybe she'll actually get to hear more of the last words like we did, which obviously made it seem like Viserys thought it was Rhaenyra. And Rhaenyra's gonna be like, no, idiot. He thought he was talking to me. Right. Yeah. So they could play with it a lot of ways, but I do believe that it's Allison being a bit too optimistic, thinking that people are going to trust the word that Viserys wanted Aegon on the throne. Right.
Right. Especially because she is in the room with him and it's all of a sudden. And the last, you know, it's like it happens the same day. Also, like, what would cause Viserys, as we see him literally his last day, mm-hmm. is to walk to the throne and defend Rhaenyra, yeah. and then suddenly, out of nowhere, say, well, actually, I want Aegon on the throne.
Yeah, I think if anything, it definitely puts it in the light where, like, we've been kind of talking about how Allison is a lot more sympathetic in the show at this point, and also is, like, very like the factions are more complex than like everyone on this side just wants this, and they have different ideas of how to do it and they have different reasons for doing it. But the one thing you have to say is that Allison definitely comes off like sheltered and a bit naive, which isn't totally inconsistent with what we've seen up to this point. I mean, remember whenever she sends Laris, this absolute creeper, out to take care of things, and then she's appalled to find out that he murdered his family. And it's like, well, what did you think was going to happen, Allison? So like, it's almost like she's too naive to be playing the Game of Thrones, but nonetheless, she is there and she's in it. So without a doubt, I think that you could say that Allison seems pretty dumb at times, but I don't think it's necessarily a misstep. I think it's intentional for the show. Which if you're Team Green, I could see that being a little bit grating, but that is the characterization that they've chosen to proceed with.
Yeah. That's fine. How sick was like the armor she's wearing everything. So just
I'm such a Rhaenys mark. Like I love this.
so unbelievable. Yeah. And I just I'm looking at going through Twitter right now just to see you know the reaction. I always try to get that up, but yeah, I'm very curious to see how Rhaenyra takes it, especially because Alicent is going to, at some point, they're going to have a conversation, probably at some point, I would guess next season, they'll have a conversation, and it's going to be about the Song of Ice and Fire. And as soon as Rhaenyra hears that, that is going to cause a little bit of doubt, right? That's going to come because that's supposed to be the secret that's passed down, which one is just an insanely awesome thing, because it ends up tying all the way into like Jon Snow and Rhaegar Targaryen and all of the cool stuff that happens towards the main series of books. But now this is a huge deal here, because it's a signal. Oh, hey, if she actually knows that, then maybe he did want Aegon, and that will be something that is used later.
Yeah, and Allison doesn't have all the details, right? She only has a certain piece of it, because at the fire, when they're talking about at the board, the hunt, right? At the whatever episode that was, 3, 2, can't remember. You know, he gives her things about the burden of it and yada yada yada. His is a Song of Ice and Fire, but like Rhaenyra knows way more. So it'll be interesting to see if she ends up relaying any of that to Allison. I doubt it. Maybe she will just like, you have no idea what you're even messing with at this point. But we can say for sure that it's going to play a major role in this war, for sure.
Twitter's just exploding, and it's nothing but Rhaenys stuff. Everyone's just like, oh, you know, if you had just said Dracarys, you could have ended the whole thing, right? You know, like this one right here is just great. Let me get this one up on the screen. For those of you guys listening on Twitter, it's like, you know, watching Rhaenys not burn the high tower. Oh, you're just like, oh my god, you could have ended it right there. It's just like actually in Game of Thrones when Sansa is there with Joffrey, and you're like, just freaking push him, push him.
Or, you know, whenever Renly offers Ned, like, hey, I got my boys here, we can take it right now. And Ned's like, oh, no, everything's going to be chill. And then, you know, loses his head.
I know.
Rhaenys will probably look back on this moment and go, I should have just burned it to the ground. The whole thing.
So cool, though, to give her this epic moment because... you know, her whole story is, you know, the queen that never was. And then, my God, I mean, also shout out, I'll look up the actress's name because it's just not one that immediately pops out of my head. But her relationship with, you know, Steve Chasson, who plays Corlys, they have been just so good.
Yeah, we've been role.
And then to get this just absolutely epic moment in this episode, and what like that means for her character right in the books. Now it's totally headcanon for me. I mean, totally headcanon that this event happens is just so cool, and it just makes that character so much more beloved, right?
Yeah, and now, you know, Allison was saying that if Rhaenys stays here and they can't use her dragon, that Rhaenyra might be willing to treat, which also, to be fair, is true, right? They have Vhagar, and if they have the Red Queen as well, that might be another reason why Allison felt comfortable. What's up, Lady Teresa?
She has us on mute because she's 2 episodes behind. But
I understand. We don't want to spoil anything. But that you know, kind of going back actually when Ryan was saying about how Allison, like, why would she think that this was going to work? Well, one of the things that we kind of forgot about to mention is the fact that Rhaenys was locked up and they have her dragon and she's not going to be able to go and join the Blacks. So they basically have 2 massive, massive ancient dragons. And with those 2, you could argue they probably have the upper hand, right? And also, at this point, Rhaenyra only has a bunch of minor lords that are swearing fealty to her. Obviously, the Vale is probably going to be pro-Rhaenyra because they're actually led by Jaime, I think, at this point. And if Rhaenyra's secession is questioned, then the Vale's leader would also be questioned. But that's stuff that we'll get into a little bit later down the line. But I think with the fact that Alicent has the knowledge, or at least thinks that it's true, that Rhaenys is still locked up and that her dragon is not going to go to the other side, that she's like, even if this is a risky thing and that even if Rhaenyra gets mad, she's going to have no options. Like, there are no other options for her. She can't go to war with us, not with Vhagar and the Red Queen sitting here. So that's another little detail that kind of, I think, actually makes Alicent seem a little less ditzy for making this move. Dude, look at that shot.
It's so sick. It was just powerful too, because we've seen dragons in this season. And that's one of the things they said. They were talking about how awesome, you know, there's gonna be a lot more dragons, especially compared to Game of Thrones. In all honesty, while we've seen them, I actually think you could almost argue the dragons have been a little kind of underwhelming this season. I mean, if I really had to get like nitpicky, I mean, obviously, like, you know, like, because they've just been, oh, we see them flying on them, but we don't ever really see them do anything like super particular cool, other than say when Daemon is fighting the crab feeder and he's just kind of torching that army. But even then, it's like they just go and they went and they hid. So yeah, you know,
Lena's episode with the dragon with Vhagar is the best. That's the best dragon episode or dragon scene, I think.
Wow. Well, no, it's this is the best.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, until this point. Until this point.
That's what I'm getting to, is like this was like the epic, just awesome, powerful dragon scene that I've been sort of hoping for all season. Right. Yeah. This was definitely the scene that I think we've been hoping for. I mean, obviously Aemon claiming Vhagar was cool, but they didn't really do anything. It's just a cool scene of him.
Yeah.
You know, of him claiming him. But this was like the first time where it's like, oh no, like dragons are a big deal. And yeah.
I mean, it's a massive way of trying to wage war and also figure out who has the upper hand. Also, people are saying that it's not the Dragon Pit, that it's the Sept. Have I been saying Dragon Pit?
No, I've been. This was the Dragon Pit.
This is the Dragon Pit, right? Yeah, I thought. Yeah, because so. No, even doesn't Allison say we'll do it at the Dragon Pit? I think she says that, right?
Okay. And that's where she goes. She goes underneath and gets the dragon because it's.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, yeah. I was making sure I wasn't crazy.
This was the Dragon Pit, absolutely, because she was saying I need to get to the Dragon Pit so I can get my dragon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then when she ends up looking and seeing where the whole thing is taking place, she smiles.
Remember, okay, I thought, smile I, on her face. I thought and we then were she right.
Sneaks. Yeah.
Right.
How else would she get the dragon underneath?
Right. Okay. I just needed to double check myself for sanity.
No,
I
was for sure. Sure. Some people in the chat. I was just, yeah.
yeah. So for those who are wondering, you know, where's going to be more of the dragon stuff? We're going to have a lot of dragon warfare coming up. So,
season two. And potentially up to 4, which, remember, there was that update by George. We did a YouTube video of it, and then we did a bigger, longer Patreon episode about it. You guys can check that out, as well as on Apple Premium, which should be back up. It was down for a little bit as we were doing some behind-the-scenes stuff, maneuvering stuff around. But Jimmy and I did like an hour-long conversation about, and it's spoiler territory for those of you guys who want spoilers, of what it means to potentially have 4 seasons, which would be 4. So George Martin in an update said he hopes it gets 4 seasons of what he feels like it would take. So 40 episodes total. So we're 9 episodes in, and I feel like the pacing now that I can sort of put that in my mind, because we were kind of thinking 3 to 5. So, I mean, what are we thinking now that we're 9 episodes into potentially a 40 episode show?
We're just getting started, brother. We're just getting started. Like, we're going to have, you know, let's say everything takes at least 1.5 years, right? We're going to have this show for another 5-6 years. I mean, that's crazy to me. Think that me and you will be coming back here about every year and a half and firing up the old engine. And then also keeping y'all entertained in between the seasons, because don't get it twisted. Right. After next week, it's full throttle ahead, folks. We're getting back into the weekly reread. There's going to be more reviews about this season. What is to come? All the news and updates that you can handle. You know, there's always good off-season drama and stuff. So you know, I have a
friend.
There's a Fire
and Blood companion book coming out in a few weeks.
That's true. And, you know, maybe we can.
I think it's next week.
You know, it would be fun if we did a bit of a read through for the Fire and Blood content to this point. Like,
I think it comes out next Tuesday.
Is it next? Yeah, it is. It is next Tuesday. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, crazy. Absolutely. So, yeah, there will be. Just because the show will be ending. And then, of course, we'll still have to do some bigger, you know, like after the following week, we'll do like a big breakdown of what do we think of season this review. Yeah. And then, of course, now, like, what does this do with the book canon, as well as like Game of Thrones canon, like just the show verse.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Because there's just so many awesome connections that this show will have made.
Can we pull up Bangus Kong's first comment? He said, is there a reason other than the plot that Rhaenys didn't torch them? Felt like the show wanted an epic moment at the expense of character logic. I disagree completely. And the reason why I don't think it goes against character logic is because you are a Targaryen. The dynasty has to stay intact. If you burn the entire, and also remember, all of the small people now believe that Aegon is supposed to be king. They believe that Viserys' last words were this. So if Rhaenys burns all of them, that immediately makes Rhaenys and her entire side usurpers. And then you're talking about a rebellion.
Kinslayers,
which is definitely considered to be one of the biggest crimes, right? Like, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
Yeah, kinslaying is a huge deal. And I did, and especially her looking at Allison, I thought was just a very, very impactful moment. But no, I do get it, because you're like, hold on a second. But that is really kind of not Rhaenys' thing, even up to the point in this season where she's talked about like legitimate heirs and you know.
Yeah, and also she's been very unreadable to this point. Rhaenys has been very hard to get to put a finger on, right? And I also would like to point out the fact that we don't know if she's totally cool with Rhaenyra at this point. I mean, they had that tense conversation at the Weirwood. Obviously, she ended up backing her in front of Viserys. But that was only for the fact that she knew where this was going and that Viserys was backing her. So it's not as cut and dry as like she's going to run over and it's going to be like all hunky-dory. She's an X factor. So we need to keep an eye on her. So if anything, you know, if you think I'm full of it and that committing kinslaying and all this stuff, if you think that that's not a good enough reason, it's more the fact that like we need to wonder what Rhaenys is thinking about doing next.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, also, you know, Rhaenys in that moment, she wouldn't have just killed Allison. She would have killed Allison and her children.
And Helena. Yeah.
Right. And as somebody who had also had her children killed, even though she doesn't know that Laenor is still alive, I don't know that that's something she would have really wanted to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in theory, at this point, right, if you're living inside this world, you could just go tell Rhaenyra, and Rhaenyra and Daemon show up, and the realm's like, well, actually, they're king.
And queen, yes.
Because that's what Viserys said. So,
yes. And Ben followed up and said, I agree, Rhaenys is a pretty opaque character, so indiscriminate murder isn't something we know she would do there. Yeah, I think it's more about like we should be asking why she didn't, and you are right, so that's cool, but not so much as a show decision, but as like a character decision in the plot, like why didn't she do that? And remember, Corlys has a lot of ambitions. So,
yeah, let's see here. What should we expect for the season finale? Yeah, so we did just a few minutes, or about probably, I don't know, 10 minutes ago, we did sort of our predictions for the next episode. But yeah, I mean, again, you know, what's going to be that final shot? Because it's ending the season. It's ending of season one, a very strong season one. Obviously, we still have one episode to go, Jimmy. But, you know, I think next week is still, I still think it's going to end with some sort of Rhaenyra sitting on Dragonstone, and they're like, we're gonna go. So there's gonna be something, or it's a tie to the Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Something about like, oh, it's about to kick off.
Yeah, I have a feeling I think I know what maybe the last scene
it could
will
be a little too spoilery.
Spoilery. Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
We still have one episode to go, and of course we will, you know, need some time to process. But where would you rank this season so far compared to Game of Thrones seasons?
Oh, that's tough. I feel like I got to see episode 10, but I mean, this is definitely like towards the upper end of what I liked. Like season 1 through 4 for me, like the best television of all time, but 5, 6, 7, and 8, obviously 7 and 8 are a little tougher, but 5 and 6 still had really, really good moments. Right. So I feel like, I would rank this above or maybe right with like a season 6 for its best moments.
Oh, but, okay. Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think this is like way more consistent than that season. So it's hard. It's hard to pick. But I would say like upper half for sure.
Yeah. To me, this feels obviously like visual effects and everything is better. This, honestly, I think I like it more. I can't say that. It's hard to say because like season four of Game of Thrones is so phenomenal and arguably like the best season in the history of television. Cause it's like Tyrion's trial and everything. And it's just like the peak of Game of Thrones, which is, you know, in theory, the best show in the history of television, right? Because it has more Academy Awards than anything that's even remotely close. So yeah, right now I'm probably it's like with season two.
Yeah, I could see that, which is great. That's a great thing, right? So I feel like the ceiling is very high, and I said that about Rings of Power as well, but that ceiling is not one that I'll ever see because I'm not going to watch that anymore. But with House of the Dragon, I can only imagine that the budget's going to get bigger, and as long as the writing stays consistent, I think we're going to have a lot more time to breathe, and I think it's actually going to be really awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. So awesome, guys. Well, hey, with that, be sure, you know, to check out some more content. We have a lot more on the channel, a lot more coming, as well as extra content on Patreon that Jimmy and I just did a huge Patreon episode, as well as it will be on Apple Premium here shortly. And be sure to leave us comments and everything. And you guys can shoot us ravens, actually, over at btkcast@gmail.com. And we do our best to get those bigger, longer theories into the show and read those. And I often make, you know, make dedicated YouTube videos out of some of your guys' questions and theories. So you can certainly be sure to do that. And yeah, and we'll be back next week. And then we'll do I am planning. I just got to figure out exactly what, you know, we'll have to schedule it, but I want to do another. We did these during Game of Thrones season 8. And at the end of it is we brought you guys on. We did a, what I called a Raven's Nest, in which we had you guys come on. We did like a big Discord chat for some of you guys on our Patreon, which is really cool because then you guys can actually have your voice heard on the show and you guys can give your thoughts and theories and opinions and all that stuff, because we want to get your guys' voice on the show as well. So with that, we appreciate all of you guys coming and hanging out with us weekly. Like I said, we have a lot more coming. We'll be doing a lot more Fire and Blood, and as well as House of the Dragon content. And then we will be going back to the reread, which is the main series where we just are, you know, kind of starting A Storm of Swords. So we'll be having a lot of that content and bigger theories. Jamie's working on a Barristan Selmy theory right now.
Yeah, so we're going to be going into some big time Barristan Selmy lore. All right.
Yeah, exactly. And then we can definitely get some more spoilery videos for the rest of it to talk about what did we see in season one that tie into the potentially next three seasons and how that's different than the books. So all of that stuff, like I said, as always, guys, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And remember that winter is coming.